here have before us this symbol of volume 2, which has all the past tense from the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam, from 46, 47. Fifty onward. 56 onward. In any case, it begins, and I'm going to read the table of contents. As soon as someone has a great inspiration of the pastime they would like to hear, immediately say so. But in this way, in any case, we're getting a tour through Krishna's pastimes. Not in Vrindavan, but this is just after Krishna has come to Dwarka. Have you been to Dwarka? Dwarka by the sea. And after that, Krishna moves all the residents of Mathura to Dwarka in chapter 50, just after he gets to Mathura from Vrindavan, practically speaking. He's immediately attacked by Jarasandha, Jarasandha and his armies, because Jarasandha's daughters, they married, all married Kamsa. So when Kamsa was killed, the daughters were all crying, and the father was very angry. So he immediately attacked Krishna. Now, he never considered that Kamsa had killed all the brothers and sisters of Krishna. Jarasandha never considered that Kamsa had placed Devaki and Vasudeva in prison, and he was killing so many of the, he drove out all the Yadavas, and also he was acting so inappropriately. He wasn't supposed to be the king. He put his father Ugrasena in prison. So Jarasandha didn't consider those points of what Kamsa had done. He just considered, he has done something irreligious. Krishna has done something irreligious, killing his uncle, because Kamsa was Krishna's mother's brother. What is that called? Mother's brother?
Mama.
Father's brother is called what in Bengali is kaka. Same. So then Krishna, one night, while Jarasandha had attacked the residents of Mathura again, he attacked so many times, then in the middle of the night, Krishna had constructed the great city of Dwarka, constructed actually by Vishwakarma. And then the residents of Mathura went to sleep in Mathura, and they woke up the next morning in Dwarka. Pretty good, yeah? And then pastimes, so many pastimes take place in Dwarka. And then Krishna finally returns. He doesn't go back to Vrindavan until almost right at the very end of his manifest pastimes. That is described in the Bhagavatam in chapter, I think, 77. Krishna goes back to Vrindavan, and then he winds up the Vrindavan pastimes. So these 25 chapters also are from 55 or 50 till 70, and all Krishna's pastimes in Dwarka as the king. So that's what this is about, Krishna's pastimes in Dwarka, 56. The story of the Shamataka jewel, and that ends in 57, the killing of Shatrajit and Shatadanva, but also in Krishna marrying his second and third queen, who was Jamavati and Satyabhama. Then, five more queens married by Krishna, beginning with Kalindi. Then the deliverance of the demon Bhomasura, which brought another 16,100 wives. Actually, these are wonderful pastimes. And then talks between Krishna and Rukmini, because as soon as Krishna married 16,000 more wives, he went to Rukmini, his first wife, and said, "You should probably find yourself a better husband than me." So he teased her in that way. He wanted to see if he could make Rukmini angry. And do you think he was able to make Rukmini angry? No, because her nature was what's called dakshin. Right wing. Didn't get angry. Then, in 61, it's called here the genealogy of the family of Krishna, because Krishna had 16,108 wives. And then each one of those wives had 10 children from Krishna and one daughter. So 16,000 times 10 is? Yes.
2,000.
Yes. And then they all had so many children too. So there was a big family. Such a big family, millions and millions and millions and millions of people. But then also in that chapter there's the story of how, on the pastime of how there was one marriage between the grandson of Aniruddha, I think it's Aniruddha's son, and the marriage between that one and Duryodhana's daughter. And in that one, excuse me, not Duryodhana's daughter, Rukmini's daughter. And even though they were Rukmini was inimical, and in that pastime Rukmini is killed. Rukmini is the brother of who? Mm-hmm. Huh?
Rukmini.
Yes, Rukmini. How do you say in Gujarati? Rukmani?
Rukmani.
Rukmani. And then, so many pastimes. Ushani Ruda, where Krishna ends up in the next chapter fighting with Vanasura, and then the story of King Riga, very interesting also. This person became, he was a great powerful king who performed so many pious activities, and he became a lizard for thousands of years because he performed pious activities, but he made one mistake. But somehow or another, despite his mistake and his becoming a lizard, he ended up seeing Krishna face to face. So why that wonderful thing happened from a terrible thing? Because you would think that he performed so many pious activities that he should at least go to heavenly planets and really enjoy himself. But he ended up a lizard. So you'd think that was very unfortunate. But he actually ended up personally being touched by the hand of Krishna. Now, so something fortunate that you think would be fortunate turned into something unfortunate, and then it turned into something fortunate. So it's difficult to tell in this world where fortune will lead and where misfortune will lead. But from the spiritual platform, everything will end up fortunate. But it takes its time sometimes. So that is described in the story of King Riga. And then Balaram visits Vrindavan. So Krishna leaves Vrindavan in the 39th chapter. And then he goes to Mathura, then he goes to Dwarka. And all that time Krishna doesn't come back. He sends Uddhava back in two chapters, 46 and 47, just after he comes back from Gurukula. He sends Uddhava to Vrindavan, which are most incredible, with messages, many messages for the residents of Vrindavan and the gopis, because their heart is breaking. But Krishna doesn't go back. Very mysterious. He says, "Oh, I love you so much. So many wonderful things," but he doesn't go back and ease their separation. So there are many reasons for this. But in any case, in this 69th chapter, not 69th, but 65th chapter, Balaram visits Vrindavan. So how do you think the residents of Vrindavan felt when Balaram went there? So happy. But they were so sad too, because when they saw Balaram, guess who they missed even more? Krishna. Oh, where is Krishna? When will he come? But actually, Padam Ekam Nagatsati Krishna never leaves Vrindavan. Very mysterious. So what? What do you want to hear? You already know. Yeah. Story. What test time?
Any.
If we keep this way, we'll just go through a summary of the whole thing. Would you like to hear about what Krishna does every day? Would you like to hear about how Jarasandha is liberated, which means how he was killed? Also very interesting. How Krishna, when Krishna is performing his daily activities, and at the end of the day, because he divides himself into 16,108 Krishnas, and each one of them goes into the palace of a queen, and Krishna is with that queen, and each of the queens think that Krishna loves me the most because he's always with me. But actually, Krishna is with all the queens, and they're all thinking like that, but they don't know. They don't know that Krishna is with all the queens. And then at some point of the day, it's time for him to go to the office. But the office for Krishna is this Sudharma assembly house. I don't know if it's a Sudharma, but the assembly house, the royal court. So Krishna, all the Krishnas come into one at that time. And then they mount, Krishna mounts to his chariot, which is drawn by Dwarka. And Dwarka puts his hands like this, and Krishna rests his hands and pushes down and uses Dwarka's body to help him get up on the chariot. So Dwarka feels so happy. And then Krishna drives off on his chariot to the assembly house, and all the queens, they feel so sad, and they just stare at Krishna, and Krishna looks at them, and he goes to the assembly. So one of the things that happens is, well, two things happen when Krishna's at the assembly on this particular day. One of the things that happens is that a message comes from some kings, many kings, who had been kidnapped by this Jarasandha, who was extremely powerful. He was the king of Bihar. Have you ever been to Bihar? Well, I don't think we're missing anything. There's an old curse. May you be born in Bihar. But in Bombay, the Biharis are considered good workers.
There is always a fight.
Huh?
There is always a fight between Bihari and Maharashtrians for the job.
Yeah.
It's a big fight. It was in a revolution that Bihari should leave Bombay.
Yeah, that was Chief Sen.
Yes.
Raj Thackeray. All Biharis to go away. All Gujaratis also. Yeah, this is, these people look funny. So in any case, Jarasandha didn't accept this principle, because he was attacking UP, Mathura. But later on, he was such a powerful king that he had defeated so many other kings, and he put them in prison, and he was about to kill them, sacrifice them to one of the devatas, to one of the demigods. So the king, who they were devotees, they were in fear, they took shelter of Krishna. And while Krishna was in the assembly house, a messenger from the kings came and offered so many prayers and asked Krishna to protect them. And they surrendered to Krishna and said, "You always take care of your devotees and we are surrendered to you, so please take care of us and rescue us." So, and then just at the same time, Narada Muni came. This is in the 70th chapter. Narada Muni came and he said that Maharaj Yudhisthira is holding a Radhasuya sacrifice and he wants you to come. So now there's a problem because he had to go to Jarasandha first, or should he go to Yudhisthira first? What do you think he should do? He can do both. He can, because in the previous chapter, Narada Muni saw him in 16,108 places, but he did the same time. But he didn't do both. Instead, he asked Uddhav, "Which one should I do first?" And Uddhava said, "Actually, you have to, before Yudhisthira can perform the Rajasuya sacrifice, he has to be the undisputed emperor of the world." Hmm. And until he's the undisputed, and if Jarasandha, he won't submit to Yudhisthira, so you have to, practically speaking, kill Jarasandha first before Yudhisthira can actually perform the Rajasuya sacrifice. So, this was a very accurate and brilliant analysis of the situation by Uddhava. Because Uddhava, his spiritual master was Brihaspati. And he was brilliant. Also, Krishna had a friend who was an astrologer, one of his friends. Was an astrologer, and he was a better astrologer even than Brihaspati. Do you know that friend's name? Subhadra. We usually think of Subhadra as Krishna's sister, and Subhadra was Krishna's sister. But also, Krishna had a friend named Subhadra who was, he was such a good astrologer and wise counselor that Maharaj Nanda Maharaj used to ask him for advice also, even though he was young, one of Krishna's friends. So in any case, when Krishna heard that the kings needed help and Yudhisthira also wanted his association, wanted Krishna to come, he decided by virtue of the words of Uddhava to travel first to Dwarka. And then he would go from Dwarka, Hastinapur, where Maharaj Yudhisthira was. And then he would later go to Magadha, which is Patna, basically in Bihar. So, and this was the first time that Krishna had gone to Hastinapur. And even though he had seen the Pandavas before, they were all devotees. And when they were exiled in the forest, Krishna was with them many times. After Draupadi, the Pandavas gained the hand of Draupadi. And Krishna recognized them. And he followed them back into the forest, and he was there to protect them when they were in the forest. But they had never been to, Krishna had never been to Hastinapur before. So, and interestingly enough, even though, I remember, we read this pastime last year, didn't we? That even though the kings needed so much help and Krishna had agreed to go and protect them, he still stayed in Hastinapur for 3 months before he went. And then, to perform the Vedasuya sacrifice, Krishna sent all his brothers in the different directions. There were 5 brothers, and he stayed. And Nakula went to one direction, Sahadeva in another, Bhima went in another, and Arjuna in another, for the purpose of making sure that all the other kings, nearby kings, would accept Yudhisthira is the emperor. So, if someone didn't, there would be a fight. And to accept Yudhisthira as the emperor meant that they would have to pay some tribute. They would have to give some money. So if they said no, then there would be a fight. So, it may be noted that dispatching his younger brothers to conquer in different directions, King Yudhisthira did not actually intend that they declare war upon the kings. Actually, the brothers started for different directions to inform the respective kings about King Yudhisthira's intention to perform the Vedasuya sacrifice. The kings were thus informed that they were required to pay taxes for the execution of the sacrifice. The payment of taxes to Emperor Yudhisthira meant that the king accepted subjugation before him. In case of a king's refusal to act accordingly, there was certainly a fight. Thus, by their influence and strength, the brothers conquered all the kings in different directions, and they were able to bring in sufficient taxes and presentations which they brought before King Yudhisthira. King Yudhisthira was very anxious, however, when he heard that King Jarasandha of Magda did not accept his sovereignty. Seeing King Yudhisthira's anxiety, Lord Krishna informed him of the plan explained by Uddhav for conquering King Jarasandha. Bhimasen, Arjuna, and Lord Krishna then started together for Girivraja, the capital city of Jarasandha. They dressed themselves to look just like Brahmins. And this was their plan, the plan devised by Uddhav before Lord Krishna started Hastinapur, and now it was given practical application. King Jarasandha was a very dutiful householder, and he had great respect for the Brahmins. He was a great fighter, a Kshatriya king, but he was never neglectful of the Vedic injunctions. According to Vedic injunctions, the Brahmins are considered to be the spiritual master of all other castes. Lord Krishna, Arjuna, and Bhimasena were actually Kshatriyas, but they dressed themselves as Brahmins. And at the time when King Jarasandha was to give charity to the Brahmanas, every day the king would open his doors, and any Brahmanas who would come, they would be given whatever they required for their livelihood, because the Brahmins didn't take jobs or anything like that. Because if you work for somebody, you have to consider that person your boss, and it gets into a particular relationship with him that you have to please him. Even if you don't like the person, even if you don't respect him. But your mentality changes in relationship to this person, and you always feel like you have to please him. So Brahmins would never accept jobs and have to have a boss. They always kept themselves independent like that, because they didn't want to compromise their spiritual position. So Jarasandha, even though he was a demon, actually, he was an asura, but he was a good kshatriya, he was very religious, and he followed vanashrama. So every day, the king would give in charity to the Brahmins, and also, not specifically Jarasandha, but kings would, they were so responsive to the citizens that there was one king, not even some time ago in the last 1,000 years in India, he had a golden bell in his court, and that golden, I think there was a golden rope attached to that bell, and it went to the center of the city, the town. And any citizen who had a complaint, they would ring the bell, and they could immediately see the king. Any citizen who had a complaint about anything, something happened inappropriate or anything, or in difficulty, they could immediately go see the king. And the king would have the power to solve their problems. So they had so much, they naturally had so much respect and reverence for the king, because the king, he treated the citizens as his own children, not just exacting taxes for them, from them. He treated them with so much affection, they felt very secure, and they had their relationship with him. So he, this Jarasandha, was a powerful fighter. He was a real Kshatriya, had that spirit. And he had great respect for the Brahmins. So Lord Krishna, Arjuna, and Bhimasen were actually Kshatriyas, but they dressed themselves as Brahmins. And at the time when King Jarasandha was to give charity to the Brahmins and receive them as guests, they approached him. Lord Krishna, in the dress of a Brahmin, said to the king, "We wish all glories to your majesty. We three guests at your royal palace have come from a great distance to ask you for charity. And we hope that you will kindly bestow upon us whatever we ask from you. We know about your good qualities. A person who is tolerant is always prepared to tolerate everything, even though distressful. Just as a criminal can perform the most abominable acts, a greatly charitable person like you can give anything and everything, whatever he has asked for. For a great personality like you, there are no distinction between relatives and outsiders. A famous person who is a famous man lives forever, even after his death. In what sense does a famous man live forever, even after his death? His name and fame. But his body may go somewhere terrible, and his body will die, and his soul may go somewhere terrible, but his name lives. So in that sense, he lives. But that's not very satisfying. If you become a dog and everyone glorifies your name and your last body, that won't help you very much. But in any case, it's thought of like that. A famous man lives forever, even after his death. Therefore, any person who is completely fit and able to execute acts which will perpetuate his good name and fame, and yet does not do so, becomes abominable in the eyes of great persons. So Krishna is speaking to Jarasandha the glories of giving charity, because he wants Jarasandha's charitable spirit to rise. So when Krishna and the Pandavas, when Krishna, Arjuna, and Bhim ask him for the charity that they want, they're trying to present their case that he will give charity, and then they'll be satisfied. There's also, this is, because the psychology, someone's psychology dictates their, how they act. There was once a study done that they wanted, they were asking for volunteers who would go around and spend 3 hours on their weekend or 4 hours on the weekend doing some volunteer work to help people who had cancer or something like that. So they were asking for volunteers, and usually out of all the people in the community, say 100 would volunteer. So they did a psychological experiment, sort of. What they did is they telephoned all the people first. They had Linda telephone all the people, and they conducted a survey. And they said, if someone were conducting a survey, if for a good cause, would you be willing to give 3 hours of your own time on a weekend for a good and worthy cause? You know, that would be really helpful to people who really needed help. Would you be willing to give that time? This is a survey. So the people naturally, what did they say? Naturally the people said yes. Because people like to be, think of themselves as charitable. And then when they went around calling for volunteers, they got 700 volunteers instead of 100, because people's minds were already predisposed towards volunteering and helping others. So if the mind is right, then the activity naturally follows. So that principle can be used in many different ways, of course. But so Krishna was getting Jarasandha's mind right, because he's the most expert of all psychologists. So he was telling him the glories of those kings who give charity, so that when he would ask Jarasandha for the charity that he wanted, then Jarasandha would give it. But actually Jarasandha was already very charitable. But Krishna's taking the opportunity to preach the duties of the Varnas here too. And then he says, such a person, any famous man lives forever even after his death. Therefore, any person who is completely fit and able to execute acts which will perpetuate his good name and fame, and yet does not do so, becomes abominable in the eyes of great persons. So he's saying the opposite now. If you do it, you'll become famous, and if you don't give us what we want, it's terrible. Such a person cannot be condemned enough, and his refusal to give charity is lamented throughout his whole life. Your Majesty must have heard the glorious names of charitable persons such as Harishchandra, Rantidev, Mughala, who used to live only on grains picked from the paddy fields, and the great Maharaj Sibi, who saved the life of a pigeon by supplying flesh from his own body. These great personalities have attained immortal fame simply by sacrificing the temporary and perishable body. So Lord Krishna, in the garb of a Brahmana, in the dress of a Brahmana, convinced Jarasandha that fame is imperishable, never dies, but the body is perishable. If one attains imperishable name and fame by sacrificing his perishable body, he becomes a respectable figure in the history of human civilization. While Lord Krishna was speaking in the dress of a Brahmana along with Arjuna Bhim, Jarasandha looked at them very carefully, and he understood that the three of them did not actually look like Brahmins, because they were big and strong, and you could tell where they had marks where they would carry the bow. Their shoulders, there were signs on their bodies by which Jarasandha could understand they were actually Kshatriyas. Their shoulders were marked with impressions due to carrying bows. So that means they carried them all the time. So therefore their shoulders were marked in that way. Just like there's a famous picture of George Harrison standing with Prabhupada. And I think his wife at that time, Patty, is there. Do you know that picture? And you can see George Harrison, his left shoulder is like this. You ever see that? Huh? Because that's the shoulder that carries the weight of the guitar. So something like that for the Kshatriyas too, when you're doing something, carrying a heavy weight. You notice that too?
Yeah.
You have a guitar shoulder. So, and he noticed that they had beautiful bodily structures, their voices were grave and commanding. Thus he definitely concluded they were not Brahmanas, but they were Kshatriyas. He also thought that he had seen them somewhere before. He had actually fought with Krishna so many times. How come he couldn't recognize Krishna? Because unless Krishna wants you to see him, you cannot recognize him. But although these three persons were Kshatriyas, they had come to his door begging like Brahmanas. Therefore he decided that he would fulfill their desires in spite of their being Kshatriyas, because they already diminished their position by appearing before him as beggars. Under the circumstances, he thought, I am prepared to give them anything. Even if they ask for my body, I shall not hesitate to offer it to them. In this regard, he began to think of Bali Maharaj, Lord Vishnu, in the dress of a Brahmana, appeared as a beggar before Bali and snatched away all of his opulence and his kingdom. He did this for the benefit of Indra, who, having been defeated by Bali Maharaj, was bereft of his kingdom. Although Bali Maharaj was cheated, his reputation as a great devotee, able to give anything and everything in charity, is still glorified throughout the three worlds. Bali Maharaj could guess that the Brahmana was Lord Vishnu himself and had come to him just to take away his opulent kingdom on behalf of Indra. Bali's spiritual master and family priest Sukracharya repeatedly warned him about this. Yet Bali did not hesitate to give him charity, whatever the Brahmana wanted, and at last he gave up everything to that Brahmin. It is my strong determination, thought Jarasandha, that if I can achieve immortal reputation by sacrificing this perishable body, I must act for that purpose. The life of a Kshatriya who does not live for the benefit of the Brahmins is certainly condemned. Actually, King Jarasandha was very liberal in giving charity to Brahmins, and thus he informed Lord Krishna, Bhima, and Arjuna, my dear Brahmanas, you may ask for me whatever you like. If you so desire, you may take my head also. And prepared to give it. So the Kshatriyas were very, 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 very strong and strict. Just like when Arjun was shooting the arrows to win the hand of Draupadi. There was a to pierce the fish through the wheel by looking at the pool. So they had to look down and shoot upward. And the wheel was spinning and they had to pierce the golden fish. So Arjuna, of course, in the guise disguised as a Brahmin, he was able to do this and he won Draupadi in that way. But when Karna stepped forward to try, Draupadi said to him, you can't do this. Because you're not a Kshatriya or a Brahmin. You're from a low caste, from a Sutta. You're a chariot driver's son. So you can't even participate. So she insulted him in this way. And then immediately Duryodhana stepped forward and said, no, he's a king. I've made him the king of Anga. And Draupadi said, real Kshatriyas don't accept charity. You can't participate. Because that was the principle. Kshatriyas won't accept anything in charity. If they want something, they take it. And if you want to stop them, they'll fight. That's what also happened to Bhim when Draupadi asked for 1,000 petaled lotus flower. So he went to the high in the Himalayas looking for this lotus flower, and he found a lake that had them. And this lake was protected by the soldiers of Kuver, who was a yaksa. So when he went to gather these flowers for Draupadi, and the soldiers said, "You can't take these, they belong to Kuvera. But if you ask him, he may give you permission." And he said, "I am a Kshatriya. I don't beg from anyone. You want to stop me? Go ahead." So they tried to stop him, they tried to kill him, and he finished them all. But that was the mood of Kshatriyas. It's such a spirit. Do you have that spirit? No. You? You have that spirit?
No.
So, Jarasandha said, "Whatever you want, I'll give you." And then Krishna addressed Jarasandha and said, "My dear king, please note that we are not actually Brahmins, nor have we come to ask you for food or grains. We are all Kshatriyas, and we have come to beg a fight with you. We hope that you'll agree to this proposal. You may note that here is the second son of King Pandu, Bhimasen." Bhimasen was huge and powerful. "And the third son of Pandu is, this one is Arjuna. As for myself, you may know that I'm your old enemy, Krishna, the cousin of the Pandavas." When Lord Krishna disclosed their disguise, King Jarasandha, what do you think he did? What do you think he did? He laughed very loudly. And then in great anger, in a grave voice, he exclaimed, "You fools. If you wanted to fight with me, I immediately grant your request. But Krishna, I know that you are a coward. I refuse to fight with you because you became very confused. You become very confused when you fight me in battle. When you fight with me, actually Krishna, I defeated him so many times. But on the last time, Krishna, for his own purposes, he ran from the battlefield, and therefore he is known as
Ranchur.
Have you been to the place of Ranchur? What is the name of the place of Ranchur in Gujarat? You know? I can't remember. So, Krishna, I know that you are a coward." Actually, Krishna was a coward. Coward boy. But not this kind of coward. "I refuse to fight you because you become very confused when you face me in battle. Out of fear of me, you left your own city, Mathura, and now you have taken shelter within the sea. Therefore, I must refuse to fight with you. As far as Arjuna is concerned, I know that he is younger than me. He is not an equal to me in fighting. I refuse to fight with him because he is not in any way an equal competitor. But as far as Bhimasen is concerned, I think he's a suitable competitor to fight with me." And after speaking in this way, King Jarasandha immediately handed a very heavy club to Bhimasen. He himself took another, and all of them went outside the city walls. Who do you think will win? All those who think Bhim will win, raise your hand. All those who think Jarasandha will win. Bhimasen and King Jarasandha engaged themselves in fighting, and with their respective clubs, which were as strong as thunderbolts, they began to strike each other very severely, both of them being eager to fight. They were both expert fighters with clubs, and their techniques of striking each other were so beautiful that they appeared to be two dramatic artists dancing on the stage. When the clubs of Jarasandha and Bhimasena loudly collided, the impact sounded like that of the big tusks of two fighting elephants, or like a thunderbolt in a flashing electrical storm. When two elephants fight together in a sugarcane field, each of them snatches a stick of sugarcane, holds it tightly in its trunk, and strikes the other. At that time, the sugarcane becomes smashed by such heavy striking. Similarly, when Bhimasena and Jarasandha were heavily striking each other with their clubs on different parts of their bodies, namely their shoulders, arms, collarbones, chest, thighs, waist, and legs, the clubs became torn to pieces. In this way, all the clubs used by Jarasandha and Bhimasena became ruined, and so the two enemies prepared to fight with their strong-fisted hands. Jarasandha and Bhimasena were very angry, and they began to smash each other with their fists. The striking of their fists sounded like the striking of iron bars or like the sound of two thunderbolts, and the two warriors appeared to be like two elephants fighting. Neither was able to defeat the other. However, for both were expert in fighting. They were equal. Neither Jarasandha nor Bhimasena became fatigued, tired, or defeated in the fighting, although they struck each other continuously. At the end of each day's fighting, they lived at night as friends in Jarasandha's palace, and the next day they fought again. In this way, they passed 27 days in fighting. On the 28th day, Bhimasena told Krishna, "My dear Krishna, I must frankly admit that I cannot conquer Jarasandha." Lord Krishna, however, knew the mystery of Jarasandha's birth. Jarasandha had been born in two different parts from two different mothers. When his father saw that his baby was useless in two parts, he threw the two parts into the forest. They were later found by a witch whose name was Jara. And she put them together. She was skilled in the black arts. She's tantric. She managed to join the two parts of the baby from top to bottom. And knowing this, Lord Krishna therefore also knew how to kill Jarasandha. He hinted to Bhimasena that since Jarasandha was brought to life by the joining of the two parts of his body, he could be killed by the separation of these two parts. Thus Lord Krishna transferred his power into the body of Bhimasena. Wow. Bhimasena was already unlimitedly strong. What to speak of when Krishna transferred his own potency and shakti into the power of Bhimasena. And then he informed Bhimasena of the device by which Jarasandha could be killed. But Krishna picked up a twig from a tree. He took that twig in his hand and ripped it right down the middle. Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is omnipotent. He knows everything. And if he wants to kill someone, no one can save that person. Similarly, if he wants to save someone, no one can kill him. Informed by the hints of Lord Krishna, Bhimasena immediately took hold of Jarasandha's legs and threw him to the ground. And when Jarasandha fell, Bhimasena immediately pressed one of Jarasandha's legs to the ground and took hold of the other leg with his two hands. And catching Jarasandha in this way, he tore his body in two, beginning from his backside up to the head. As an elephant breaks the branches of a tree in two, Bhimasena separated the body of Jarasandha in two. The audience standing nearby saw that Jarasandha's body was now divided into two halves, so that each half had one leg, one thigh, half a backbone, half a chest, one collarbone, one arm, one eye, one ear, and half of a face. As soon as the news of Jarasandha's death was announced, all the citizens of Magadha began to cry, "Alas, alas," while Lord Krishna and Arjuna embraced Bhimasena to congratulate him. Although Jarasandha was killed, Neither Krishna nor the two Pandava brothers made a claim to the throne. Their purpose in killing Jarasandha was to stop him from creating a disturbance to the proper discharge of world peace. A demon always creates disturbances, whereas a demigod always tries to keep peace in the world. The mission of Lord Krishna is to protect the righteous and kill the demons who disturb a peaceful situation. Therefore, Lord Krishna immediately called for the son of Jarasandha, whose name was Sahadev. And with due ritualistic ceremonies, the Lord asked him to occupy the seat of his father and reign over the kingdom peacefully. Lord Krishna is the master of the whole cosmic creation, and he wants everyone to live peacefully and execute Krishna consciousness. After installing Sahadev on the throne, he released all the kings and princes who had been imprisoned unnecessarily by Jarasandha. End of chapter. And still, that's a heroic type of a story. Thank you. Any questions or comments?
I just wanted to when at the first time, okay, the first time whereby Mother Yashoda was giving, was talking about Krishna when he was in Vrindavan, and when Krishna, Subhadra, and the sister and Balaram came and they were watching, they were Mother Yashoda was talking about his past time. They were crying in their eyes, something like that. I just had some story like that. So, does it come in the same tenth canto in the Krishna book? So
that story is that's spoken of by the devotees. I think maybe in Brihad Bhagavatamrita Sanatana Goswami mentioned something like it.
So what are those forms of Jagannath?
There are a few different explanations how those forms came into existence. That's one of the explanations. They were ecstatic. Subhadra, Krishna Bala, Subhadra was guarding the door. The Rohini Devi was speaking the pastimes of Krishna and Vrindavan to the queens, Krishna's queens. She was made to guard the door, and she was hearing them, and she became ecstatic. And her eyes became big, and her hands went into the body. Feet went into her body, and then Krishna and Balaram came by, and they also started listening at the door, and they also, their forms were transformed. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also showed this transformation of forms upon hearing ecstasy. For Krishna himself did this. So these pastimes are discussed, but it's not in the Bhagavatam. Do you read Bhagavad Gita sometimes? You?
Every day.
How much do you read every day?
Can't read your context.
Oh.
Yes. I just started.
Oh, that's wonderful. You?
I just started reading.
Very good. Any other questions or comments?
It's about duties, like we're supposed to do our duties in this world, like if you're in the army, shooting in the war, safety, so what about if you're studying meat?
You shouldn't do that. Get that kind of a job.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so then.
So isn't that a duty?
If you... Yeah, but you get the reactions of that duty. Because you take the fruit. I mean, you're selling it. It's described that there are several people who get karma from the meeting. One is the person who takes care of the animals. One is the one who kills the animals.
Transport.
Yeah. Cook. Implicated in karma in this way. So don't take a job like that. You can get a much better job. Don't worry.
I
So if you have a bad job and you do your duty, and you're getting the fruit of the work, then you're implicated in the karma of that. That's just called fruit of work. What kind of a job do you want? You don't know yet?
No.
What kind of a job do you do? Accounting. You want to be an accountant?
Yeah, I don't mind. I just want to be trained.
Before you begin. That's good. You don't have to specifically want to be an accountant, though.
I have an idea.
He's a cook.
Okay.
Even before he was a cook. What's the difference between cooking prasadam and cooking non-prasadam? What's the very difference?
When you're cooking non-veg, you feel a bit like an undertaker.
An undertaker?
Yeah. Like my dad once worked as an undertaker, and he'd be sewing up chores and all sorts of things. It was not a very nice profession.
I mean, if you do it dutifully, it's still not very nice. It's the people in Kamagun, in the mode of ignorance, to take those kind of duties. Your question is almost, if you take a terrible job, is it better to do a terrible job well, or is it terrible to do a terrible job badly?
To make a terrible job better.
Better to not do a terrible job. That's the answer. And then we won't have to ask that question of a terrible job. I have to cut off people's fingers and things like that. Should I do that dutifully, or should I be neglectful of my duty? I'm in the drug. Any other questions?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's about karma.
Yeah.
So when we chant, is it that karma actually gets destroyed?
Yeah.
Karma, it just goes, and we just don't know. We just don't believe. It just comes and goes.
But you still have, there's still one that's left with one's prarabdha karma, basically. Well, you could say that if one chance, a better way to look at it, is that when one chance, all karma is gone. But Krishna still, by his kindness, gives you something. Because if you had no karma, you couldn't have a body. And if you didn't have a body, then you couldn't progress in your Krishna consciousness. So by Krishna's mercy, he gives you, allows you to, he takes care of you mostly through your manifest karma, corrupted karma. But it's not directly under, for a devotee, it's not directly under his karma, it's directly under Krishna. So one question could be, if you don't have any karma, but you're directly under Krishna, will it feel any different between you have karma and you're under your karma, or you're directly under, you're under Krishna, but getting your karma from Krishna? Will it feel any different?
Only in the study.
Huh?
Only in the study.
Only in the study?
Yeah, once. Like, when you can lose all your karmas,
No, I don't think it's like that. Why, do you feel you should be losing all your karma?
I don't know.
That's what I'm asking. But for a devotee, he knows that Krishna is taking care of him, that he's not directly under his karma. How does he know? Of course, Shastra says, but how does he know? Because he sees Krishna taking care of him very clearly. The example that is usually given, say if there's a fan, and chanting or becoming a devotee is like taking out the plug of a fan. So does the fan immediately stop when you take out the plug? No. But it loses the force, and then it's just a matter of time before it slows down. So it's something like that also. But if we add new electricity, meaning new karmic actions, and then that will affect. If we add new electricity, the fan speeds up again. So we should be careful and not add any karma, improper activities. Otherwise, we get troubles. So that's that carefully. And not lose the opportunity that we have. Okay. Now it is at 15 and we shall stop. Thank you.